move on with this. Hi, Judy. How are you?
All right.
So we like to call it to order. So we do a roll call at this normal.
No. Right, we're so just
this,
here.
This is in reference to Pine Oaks.
Yes. You don't need to do roll call?
Nope.
Why not?
I checked already. We don't have to do roll call.
Because it's special?
Mm-hmm.
Special meeting. Yeah.
So a special meeting relative to the final Pine Oaks Golf Course closure. Boy, is that right, Tom?
Right.
So, Kathy, you want to step us through this?
Sure. So, I emailed this out to all of you. This was John's email to City Council, just outlining. Clark, did you get a copy of this?
Mm-hmm.
Basically just outlining, you know, where we are at this point with Clark, I'd say, tendering his resignation. So John proposed to City Council that we bring a consultant on to help us evaluate the best use of that property moving forward. And he kind of has a general idea of where he's going with it. If from a feasibility standpoint, it looks like it, you know, that's the purpose of the consultant, is to help us determine, is this a feasible option for that property? There's a need for affordable housing in this area due to the logistics centers that have developed out there. But, and I'm not talking about low income housing, I'm talking about affordable housing. So he put some examples here of some that that he pulled up that he personally kind of likes. But, and also the potential of having a public golf course as part of that, a nine-hole course, whether that's just a true nine holes, or is it an executive course, or what is it? And then perhaps a couple holes for the first tee. And all that is just really John's idea of just to get the conversation started and get kind of give the consultant a little bit of direction. He did present this to City Council last Tuesday night, and they did authorize him to move forward with this plan of having the, and it's the same golf course architect that we used for this facility, Michael Beebe, and then a guy that does, Mike will work in partnership with a guy who has done some of these smaller housing communities that also include nine-hole courses. So in that conversation with council, though, Ms. Rich did ask for us to evaluate whether there is an option for keeping the golf course as it is open while we go through this process. And so that's what we're looking at right now in terms of Clark's, how Clark might manage that facility moving forward. And we have a meeting, is it this Friday?
Friday.
Just to try to talk through some of that and see, you know, we don't know, council didn't really give any direction on what they have a stomach for in terms of what they're willing to absorb. Clark can't continue, you know, the number of rounds is falling and the city doesn't have the money to invest in it. So it's not fair to ask Clark to continue to operate and potentially at a loss. So the question is, how much is the city willing to put into that? And we don't know the answer to that, but we're going to come up with what is that number look like, what does that number look like, and take that back to council and see if they want to keep it open for a year or 2 years. I expect that we would be looking at some kind of management contract as opposed to a lease that puts all of the burden on Clark. So that's really the overview. Clark, do you think anything else to add to that?
No, I think that's it. I mean, the council meeting, like Kathy said, the dialogue was open. I originally wasn't going to go to the council meeting, but when I saw it in the paper that day, I felt like it wouldn't be. The optics of me not being there wouldn't be very good. So I showed up, and of course, naturally, if I'm sitting in there, they're going to make me come up there. But I think that did get the dialogue started, along with the fact that Mary Sue Rich did start asking those questions. She started, you know, probing pretty hard and wanting to figure out, you know, is this it? I mean, has there been no thought whatsoever? Just, we're closing, we're done? And that's certainly not the case. This is something that's been brewing for a little while, but it was, you know, for me personally, it was encouraging to at least have the conversation started. But it's very, very premature at this point. There's really, unfortunately, there's not really anything to report other than if something doesn't develop, then I guess Pine Oaks will close in May. But hopefully we get something worked out. And even if it doesn't involve me, I don't know. The sky's the limit on what, you know, management, city council, what they want to do. The community, it boils down to the community as well. I know there's a lot of people over at Pine Oaks, Napoli. I mean, they're, you know, they're not happy with it. With the possibilities of the place, you know, closing. I guess the biggest fear probably is, you know, if it's inevitable that Pine Oaks and the city of Ocala and the golf industry and the climate that we're in right now, if it's inevitable that there needs to be more golf courses closed to so other courses can survive, and if the ultimate destiny of Pine Oaks is one day to be something other than a full-scale championship 18-hole golf course, there's going to be people that's going to naturally be upset about that. But at the same time, at some point in time, you do have to look at reality and you have to look at economics, and if something's not going to work, it ain't going to work. And the question I started asking myself, if I was a multimillionaire and I owned Pine Oaks and Ocala Golf Club both, and a few years ago I decided that I was going to put a lot of money into one of the two facilities and not really put anything into the other one, and to the point that it, you know, where it becomes not profitable. And at the same time I've been doing that, the one that I put all the money in is, it's still struggling to be in the black because it's tough. It's a tough deal. Would I then say to myself, well, heck, I might as well put another $3 or $4 million in this one over here and see if I can make it profitable again? I don't know that I would do that. I may run from it as far as I could go. So I think sometimes the public, because it is perceived that public funding and government funding, and, you know, they got plenty of money. They can just dig it up somewhere and do it. I think there's a perception there sometimes that's how easy it is, but that's not always the case. You know, 100,000, 200, 300, whatever, that's probably, I'm sure there's a little slush fund there that can be dug up if it had to be. But $2 or $3 million is a lot to ask of our community. So if it is inevitable that Pine Oaks' destiny is to be something other than what it is today, I would still be hopeful as a person in the community and as a person that cares about people. You know, I would hate to see the door shutter and then ultimately it's 3 or 4 years and nothing still happened, and then eventually it's just like, forget it. And that's the likelihood of what would probably happen. You know, it'd be a lot easier if something's kind of in place, at least within a reasonable time. Because things tend to fall by the wayside. I mean, we've had, you know, a lot of development that was supposed to happen in Pine Oaks the last 20 years. I mean, it never did happen. You know, it's going to happen, but then it never does. So it'd probably be the same scenario. So anyway, I don't know if y'all are feeling the same, what I'm saying makes sense, or if y'all would agree with that, or... But, you know, sometimes good things just have to come to an end at some point. So I guess the question is, once again, if that is the ultimate destiny, that Pine Oaks is not going to be does it make sense for the city to invest, you know, a few thousand dollars to keep it going at least until something else can happen? Or is it best to not do anything and just let it fail? And I guess that's the question.
So in that question, did you kind of, and I don't know this, so I'm asking, did you propose some type of...
Not in the meeting, I didn't, because there was a lot of questions asked that I didn't feel comfortable answering. I didn't have the answer.
Well, obviously, there is a number that the council can get to and say yes. There's a monetary number that you will agree to if council said, hey, here it is, whatever that number is. You have a number in your head that you will keep Pine Oaks open.
Probably a tentative number, nothing exact. I got to get with Kathy and John and the whole group.
Yeah, and I'm just asking. So I guess
I'm in a position to negotiate.
Yeah, the reason being is just saying, are you open to any type of discussion?
I mean, I'd like to be.
At this point, he has said, he needs a salary,
yeah.
And he needs to not have the risk, and so. But there's a lot more that factors into this that doesn't factor in when we did. So like with our Billy Casper contract, the city owns the equipment. So in this situation, Clark owns the equipment. So that will have to factor into it. So there's a lot of things that are different.
And, a lot of variables.
Yeah. And if we're truly looking at a short term, our expectations are going to be different than our expectations after, when you make it a $2.5 million investment in a piece of property, your expectations of how that property is going to be maintained after that. I mean, we knew going into this contract with Clark originally that the course had basically lived its life in terms of the infrastructure.
So the disc golf, none of that, boosted revenues or anything? It was just still,
a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it probably didn't seem as significant, but, two or three years ago, but when the numbers were down and then all of a sudden that goes, you could feel it. I mean, there was a little more than probably what the average person would guess. I mean, there was 4,000 rounds over there that were paid for, probably more than that. But
and then cart rentals.
Between cart rentals sessions. And, that, we would sell a few of the discs in the shop there. It's $25,000 worth of revenue, probably. Well, not probably, I got the numbers. It was about between 20 and 25. And then the part, it's hard to measure what kind of food and beverage sales that you get out of it. Quite a few beers and things like that. So probably $30,000 a year. That's huge right now. It didn't seem so significant 5 years ago, but that's a big difference now. So that's gone. That wasn't entirely profit, but it was mostly profit.
So what about the wetland piece? How significant was that? Obviously, it had to be a huge play in your thinking. The city said we're going to put this wetland park.
Well, I mean, that's a consideration too. I mean, there's been a lot of things over the years, that has happened in terms of things, just infrastructure that we've got to put some pipes in and some wire. There's been quite a bit of disruption of, it's not disruption of operations, but just things going on that not necessarily always comfortable. We had like an example, we had one time we had to have a wire put in from the pump house over there by 7 Green. They had to run, dig a trench all the way across the fairway on 7 and go across 4 and out to the spray field and just little things like that. It's a little bit stressful when they're going on. And the original plan back in the first 5 year term, the goal there, my original business plan, what I visualized was, to try to redo some of the greens during that period. And the goal was to get most of them done in, say, the first 5 years and then kind of move on from there. But, we did a couple and one of them turned out okay, the other one not so okay. But I was still, willing to continue to try, and then it kind of got to where, there was 1 year that would, the whatever department would be the ones that would put the liners in the ponds. there was one year, you know, those guys were like, well, hey, you may not need to redo greens this year because we got to reline the pond on 9 and 18. This, I mean, I guess that's a threat. Perhaps it was out of, it's nobody's responsibility directly. I mean, it wasn't like anybody was on purpose trying to do something to make it uncomfortable, but it was. I mean, but that, of course, that project never did happen. But to answer your question about the wetland area, that is a huge threat. I have no clue. I mean, John, I don't know that John knows exactly, but I mean, there's definitely going to be a lot going on there with heavy equipment, digging, wires. I mean, I'm already, a nightmare that I lose my internet and we can't get it fixed for a week. That type of stuff.
Started?
And there are some, I think there's some ties in steel to the irrigation over there, even though it's all underground over there. It'll be interesting to see. There might still be some pipes that are interconnected some way that might be disrupted. That'll be interesting to see. I don't know the ultimate plan. I would assume there would have to be some type of a berm or some kind of a barrier to separate the wetland from the other part of the property, but I just don't know that.
That's
another thing that was,
So the wetland part staying even with the new proposal, that doesn't go.
I think it has to.
That's a separate
thing.
So let me understand. So let's say for this argument's sake, Pine Oaks closes the middle of May. And we're going into the summer season, and we all know that the summer season, everything kind of slows down. So to keep it open through the summer months, the city wants to keep it open. I don't know if that's the greatest plan in the world, but let's say they don't. They don't want to, or they won't. So the people that are playing there, concentrate on this course because of the intake, the flow coming here? I mean, cart-wise, and more players to the course and so forth. I mean, that's what I'm looking at, where we have to anticipate, where are these people going to go if they can't play Pine Oaks?
So in the summer, we wouldn't stay open just for the summer and then close at the end of the summer. Obviously, we'll close at the beginning. We'll close in May if we're going to close it.
Right.
If we're going to leave it open, it won't be open just for the summer. We'll go ahead and commit. Maybe they have a stomach for this for a year or two. Jason and I have had conversations, and Clark and I talked about, while there are some times during peak play that they couldn't accommodate Pine Oaks play, but there are most of the time they could accommodate it, except for he probably doesn't have enough carts, so we would probably be looking, and Clark would be probably looking to, if Pine Oaks closed, he'd be looking to liquidate his equipment, so we would potentially buy some of that.
I mean, if push comes to shove, we could always go to front and back start, like a lot of courses do.
That makes sense to me. I mean, it always had made sense out here.
Yeah.
We're not near capacity out here, I don't think. I mean, so I think it's a great opportunity.
We definitely would need more carts and definitely need some type of an enclosure to house all those carts.
Yeah,
I mean, what we have now is not great. I mean, because I'm talking standpoint of being on the board and also working here at the course. And the city was laxed in when we remodeled in 2008. A few thousand dollars more, they could have enclosed that whole back area, with some thought. And then all the carts would have been protected. Because on days like this, or rainy mornings, we waste a lot of time, and the carts think of beating from the rain, all the water, wiping down in the whole 9 yards.
Yeah, so it's probably more than a few thousand.
But
you're right, there needs to be a cover over that area, but there was a cover over that area when we renovated, and it crashed after we renovated it. And so somebody should have been really, really, really persistent with the insurance company. And that's something Chris Dobbs, we have conversations about it now and then on, can we get back to looking at a cover for that area? But even with that area covered, that's not large enough to handle any more carts. So That's the first thing Jason said is, the extra carts would be nice, but I don't know where you'd put them.
Yeah, can probably get maybe, you squeeze 10 more carts back there, 12 maybe, yeah.
It's squeeze.
Yeah. So at this point, you know, I think, and you know, Ken has said, even when we met with Clark originally, I feel like if we could find a way to make this go on a couple more years, but, you know, we're not sure what those numbers look like yet. We don't know how feasible that is. The city, even to get another year out of that, the city would have to invest in the irrigation system. So the question is, and we can upgrade the existing controller system, but, you know, we know that in doing so, we're probably spending $75,000 on a system that's already obsolete. And we don't know once we get it fully operational what we're really looking at in terms of the hydraulic system and what works. And so it's a lot more than just the money to upgrade the controller system, but until we upgrade the controller system, we don't know what else we're looking at. And so then we'd have to put the resources towards troubleshooting all the heads. But we know that if we're gonna continue this, something's gotta happen with that irrigation system. And you know, there's the play down there. I don't know if that was addressed in this memo, but the play is down. And you know, a lot of that we recognize. Some of it has to do with golf being down, but a lot of it has to do with the course conditions. And not to, you know, to give Clark credit, he has been, we once had someone say in our department, polishing a turd.
Well, I think Clark, for a long time.
Yeah.
Clark and I said this all along. Clark saved the city, in my calculations here, $4 million over the last 8 years, losing $500,000 a year to basically break it even. We should be applauded for that. That's unbelievable.
Well, he didn't save it because we would have closed it.
Yeah, but.
So, just to. I want to thank Clark for everything he did to milk this. Yeah, I agree. So the city was looking at closing this property 7-8 years ago.
Well, the point being, I would hire Clark. I mean, I've been known Clark for 20 years. I've been in the golf business for 25 years. And I'd hire Clark to manage any operation, but I wouldn't hire him to manage the Titanic. And this is a absolute sinking ship. You don't throw good money after bad. You don't keep that place open. Thank God, the minute Clark leaves that place, it should be shut down. They should be locked the doors, chain it up, and say development starting. You know, I would rather see not getting the golf business all together, but in conjunction with the housing development, a nice not 9-3, just a 9-hole course that the first tee can also play. That's all you need in conjunction with housing development. But Clark's done a great job out there.
Absolutely.
But you don't start messing with that irrigation system. No, bury that thing. Just close it down. And then when they develop the property, they're gonna run all new lines and a whole new irrigation. They're gonna bypass that entire mess. And that's, I mean, close the thing down. Don't. You might say the thing might cost $200,000. We can pay Clark $100,000 a year. But Clark's not gonna be a slave like he is when he's a private owner. He's gonna hire a superintendent. He's gonna have real staff. It's going to cost the city a lot of money, plus irrigation, plus a capital cost. It's going to be a money dump. I mean, I buy distressed businesses. The first year is the worst year because you're dumping money after this. It's going to be a money dump. I mean, thank God for Clark staying there that long, but thank God for when Clark leaves to close that thing down.
It's well, not, it's not closed yet.
And so the reality is...
No offense, Clark. You did a great job.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was supposed to close. I mean...
Yeah.
8 years ago, myself, the current city council, and I'm speaking for Kathy, nobody thought that we'd be sitting here 8 years later having this conversation. First of all, it would have never probably been leased like it was, because everybody then thought that there was going to be development, you know, so the way the contract was structured was to account for that, and I probably wouldn't even have done it if we hadn't had it structured the way we did, because we did have some safety nets there, you know, so if the city did decide to close it, you know, we could, you know, loan would be paid off, there'd be a buyout, that type thing, and it just, you know, it just never did happen. And then when it come time to re-sign the second time, I mean, I had, you know, I was almost not going to do it then. And but just by virtue of, you know, what not wanting to see what's happening right now happen, I agreed to resign. And of course, at the time, you know, we thought there was going to be a port and all this. I mean, it was all but a done deal, but then it never did happen. So here we are. So I guess I'm sounding more negative today than I did in council the other night, because when I stood up there, I was, you know, I wanted them to understand that I do, would, you know, I don't want to see it close because of the fact that it's going to affect a lot of people. So I obviously have a closer relationship with those people, and I hate to see them get hurt. So that's my, because they love the place. But, and I would love to stay a couple more years, but at the same time, I understand what you're saying. I get it. I mean, I've been getting it for a long time. Mm-hmm. So we'll just have to see what happens.
And so let's talk about them getting hurt, because I'm just playing devil's advocate, because we're not talking about kicking people out of their homes or...
Well, that's not right.
We're talking about pressure.
Their feelings hurt, maybe.
Yeah. Well, that's right.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of golf around here. And even if they don't come to a Ocala Golf Club, there's lots of places to go get...
And actually, hurt. The pricing is all very similar.
Yeah,
I mean Stone Creek here.
Yeah, got to be a competitive environment. That's capitalism. It has to be in a capitalistic society.
Yeah, it's not like it's a ton cheaper than like Pine Oaks, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you charge $30 or something.
If
you don't get the right coupon.
I've said since I've been there, if I got to start charging $20, we need to put a lock on the gate.
Exactly.
Kind of there.
But it's an opportunity to absorb some of those people and maybe cut the loss here from 250,000 to a more reasonable number by absorbing some of those golfers that were here.
Yeah.
And, you know, capacity is a wonderful thing. I mean, not if when you're at capacity, it's a wonderful thing. You know, I think it's a great
thing. So, for me, it's been a staple of the community for years. I was the ring bearer at a wedding there when I was 7 years old.
Definitely a landmark.
It's a landmark. Mm-hmm. I kind of disagree with what you were saying, but I think I understand the economics of it. But I have to ask you, in 2008, had the crash not happened, economy is rolling, you know, we're churning. Where would you be at today? And that's, you probably can't answer that, but I guess, again, it goes back to that economic question. Would we be having this conversation? I don't know. But I do know that the economy is on an uptick right now. You have a business park over there that's churning very well.
Yeah, I mean, that's I thought about all that, and that's the frustrating part. It's, you know, where we are now. It takes time. First of all, it takes time to market to an audience. But the product that we have to market right now is not there. It's just not. And I had a conversation with a pretty high-ranking person at FedEx about trying to get a lead there, and they're like, we're going to go somewhere else. I mean, that's the kind of, you know, if people are being very, they're not being rude or ugly, but they're being very overt with their comments. You know, I started hearing that really about 2 years ago, but it's really got worse this past year. Because I've tried. I mean, I've made an effort to reach out to the FedEx people and fully intended to do the same thing with Chewy.
AutoZone.
I mean, it's an opportunity of a lifetime. And I mean, and I can't answer it. I'm not a business analyst, but you know, in 3 or 4 years, if you had the right golf course there in that community, if you had a very nice course back like it was many years ago, there's a market there to market to, and I think you could probably at some point be successful. But the problem is for me personally, it's a tail end, a dollar short. I don't have enough financial stamina to withstand that. So I guess the question is, would the city have that? The city, you know, if some people would say that it's short-sighted to not at least look at that.
Right. You're right. Well,
the economy is getting better. It's taken forever. The growth has been slow, but it seems like it's taken off now. So,
And the city is looking, I mean, that's the point of having the consultant come in to look at. I mean, if the vision of, you know, townhomes or villas that are $120,000 homes in an executive course or nine-hole course that is also open to the public, right there where, you know, you have a lot of, where you, all those people that are working at Chewy and FedEx and, you know, they're looking for homes close to where they live, and if there's a golf course there, and there's going to be a wetlands park and a community center, and I mean, there's a whole greenway being developed there that it could really make a difference in that section of our town in terms of turning things around. And yeah, and like I said, there's a demand for good affordable housing in this community, and so I think that the city sees there being a golf course there again. It's not necessarily going to be an 18-hole course, but you know, the original golf course was a 9-hole course.
So. You know, it seems to me that idea would do a lot more for that community, if we're talking about that community, West Ocala, than having an 18-hole golf course.
Agreed. And the juniors.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that would really, you know, with everything else that's going to go over there, that would really, it would be.
And the reality is, you know, we don't really promote a nine-hole round out here. Where, you know, used to be, we did promote that quite a bit at both golf courses, that you could go either way. But it's a, you know, the reality is there's a lot of working people who don't have time to play 18 holes, but they'd love to play 9 holes. And so there, I think that's why you see a movement in that direction.
The industry is moving in that
direction. Yeah. We get a lot of that. A high volume.
Yeah, and always have. Always have a lineup.
The time element is probably the biggest thing.
My first course was a 9-hole par 3 in Hawaii at 9 o'clock at night. Seriously, and it was packed. Everybody went to the pool. But again, it was a par 3, 9-hole, lit till, I think, 11 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I'd be amazed at the amount of golfers that are, you know, out playing it. 9, 10 o'clock at night. Of course, it's Hawaii, so it's a little bit different, but
it's bedtime for the kids, so it's a good time to exit.
That's when the gentlemen go out and have a 10th hole drink.
I agree with you on the warm, fuzzy feelings of golf and having been around for a long time, but I think it's an opportunity to have a better golf experience with the plans the city has. Maybe a different golf experience, but a golf experience still, where you can go out with your kid and play 9 holes and enjoy it, and on a nice, well-conditioned golf course, I'm sure the city will do a nice job of that. I mean, in my mind, it's a win-win on that. I mean,
and just so you know, we're looking for a private developer to come in, not for the city to construct it.
That's what I was going to ask, is this is all private, right?
The city, so and who knows? Who knows what we'll get? And these, every one of these are different, right? So you have the hotel property where the city basically gave them the property as long as they meet certain conditions, because that's how strongly we feel about having a hotel in downtown Ocala.
They're quality operators too. I mean, it's right. Great that you got those guys in there. I mean.
So same with this. We're looking to see a private developer come in, and you know they make their money off of the sale of the real estate. So in terms of constructing the golf course, they don't really object to that. What it comes down to is how you model the ongoing operation of that. Because typically they make the money off the sale of the real estate, they bank some of that to help offset the operating costs, or they have extraordinary fees for the people that live around there that they pay to help support it. Well, you're not going to get that in this kind of model, right? So I don't know, but apparently this is happening a lot right now, and so I wish I could remember the name of the guy. It's not, BB is involved in, from a golf course architect standpoint, but there is a person that is actually the one John originally contacted, who's, I'm surprised with no one. Do you remember the name?
Uh, Is it D-Link or D-I? Well, the person I met was an older gentleman.
Right.
I mean,
he is older. He's really old.
He personally knew Robert Trent Jones Sr.
You guys would recognize it.
It was interesting because he
so the city can sell the property contingent on them doing this.
Yes.
Right?
Or give.
Okay.
The property contingent on city consent. So, for example, when we did the hotel property, it had to be a certain name brand, and we didn't pick the name brand, but it had to be the, like, you couldn't bring in a travel lodge. It had to be a certain.
People are building golf courses, but the model has changed kind of back the way it was 30, 40 years ago with higher end. There's not enough rounds of golf to go around for a $25 to $30 golf course to, you know, make a profit. So the models now, all the courses that are opening, or a good majority of them, are higher end. $50 to $100. You know, we're only going to get 20,000. We're never going to get more than 20,000 rounds. So we got to get our couple million dollars somehow. You know, we're not going to get it at $25 a throw. So, and then the nine hole concept, which I guess would be the lower end courses, but we're replacing every golfer with another golfer, but the new golfer plays 15 times a year. The one we replaced played 150 times a year. That's the difference. You know, our generation, you know, you're a golfer, that's what you do. You're a golfer. But people do so many other different things now.
Yeah.
It's a hard sale.
So, I don't know if there's any more questions for Clark and Kath. I'm not quite sure. It's just informational. Do we need to take a vote or anything?
I guess if we have an overall, I mean, I don't know that we're looking for a vote, but just an overall consensus, it'd probably be good for John to be able to say that this has been brought to the golf board, and overall, what was the consensus in terms of, they've already approved for the concept planning stage of the redevelopment of the property. But what they haven't heard is, do we close the golf course or do we try to limp along until this comes to fruition? And, you know, the reality is these type of things take three, 4 years down the road. And look how long the hotel property.
Yeah, definitely. I know Ms. Rich, I think, mentioned to Clark that, hey, she would like to see maybe stay open for at least until we got this, you know, going. So I don't know what the board thinks about that. Or it's not a vote, so I guess feedback
you have to take that long. Thus,
sure. You know, by time,
I mean, I know it wouldn't be built
because they have to do concept planning, and then the next step is, you know, then you negotiate deals. The city would actually put out an ITN to find a private developer. Typically, what happens is you have multiple proposals come in, the city picks the people they want to work with. Then they have to go out and start finding financing for the project, and that takes a long time to run all that down. So it takes a little while. I bet you're talking at least 3 years. And I'll tell you that our plan, if it's not open, I guess I should run that by you. If it's not kept open as a golf course, and you know, the issue of the Wetlands Park, that's real important to factor in, because we're getting ready to have, he's already got problems with number of rounds dropping. This is gonna be a major construction zone over the next year while we construct this Wetlands Park. So he's gonna have that to contend with as well. And so we're aware of that. Our plan, if it doesn't stay open as a golf course, we're gonna relocate and probably look to do it anyways. I haven't had a chance to talk to Clark about that, but relocate our recreation administration group, not our administration office, but our recreation division head and secretary We were going to relocate them over there so that that building doesn't sit empty. You know, a building declines so rapidly when it's empty. He has extra office space that we could probably do that anyways. We're looking for a home for them. And then to continue to rent out that banquet, you know, the banquet room there, which again, even if we leave it open as a golf course, we could probably help with that. So, and then and to have eyes on the property. We would pay somebody to keep it knocked down so that it doesn't, you know, grow up and become a forest. So it could still be open for the public to use it just as open space, you know, go out there and walk your dog or walk, you know, and that's, a lot of times that's how it's worked at the preserve. People go out there and follow a general path. The cart paths don't go all the way around, but you can kind of, so that's the, that was really the plan. If it doesn't stay open as a golf course, it would still be, you know, we would still keep people in there.
So who will make the final decision on closing? Well, the city council. And, but they haven't really discussed that, I think.
They've asked us to bring them back numbers. What does that look like from a, how much money would we really be asking them for?
I mean, off the cuff, I would love to see it stay open, but that's easy for me to say, right? Yeah. I don't have to manage it with limited funds and deals and everything you guys have to do.
And what's happening Friday? You said there's a meeting?
We're meeting with Clark on Friday with John just to talk about the numbers. What are, and what is this really, what form of agreement is this? I think that we'll probably proceed with terminating the lease as it is and either amending that lease or entering a separate management contract that would keep him in there. And what if it, and the, like I said, it's a little bit different because there's things to factor in, such as Clark owns the equipment. So, you know, what's the compensation to him for the depreciation on that equipment over time? And he's making payments on that equipment. So how does he get compensated for that?
Has anybody thought about the effects of the renovation of this golf course and has had on that golf course in terms of play and the subsequent, it's going to continue the continual decline relative to this golf course? Because it's only going to get worse and worse and worse, and this course gets better and that course gets worse. Mm-hmm. And this course will get better. The greens are continually improving as they mature and everything else, and that course is going to continue to get worse. So that's another thing to think about. This is, it's a bad year for you, but next year's going to be even worse.
No. And not just this course, yeah. Other courses that are renovated, yeah, as well. That, you know.
That's, well, my projections, I agree. That's the reason I have, this is not by choice, or did I say that right?
You would love it if the golf course was in great shape and you're making a profit every year.
Right. And I had to do something because the trend and the projections out forecast is dismal. So before I go bankrupt, my company, you know, it's, you know, for the record, we made profit last year, but the trend is not looking good. So that's why I just feel like I got to do something before I do go bankrupt. You know, that's
Smart choice.
Yeah. I mean, when you're down $97,000 one year to the next, that's huge. Unless you got a $2 billion company, that'd be a pretty good year. I think they call that flat. That's about 10%, you know, more, probably, I don't know what the percent is, but, we, you know, it was $1 million, and it was $9 million, and it was, you know, it's just been a steady decline. It was, the only year that it actually went up, to answer your question about effect here, the summer they closed, my revenue went up that year.
Yep, of course.
And when we reopened this thing over here with these beautiful greens, man, for about 3 months, I didn't have nobody. Or other people. I don't know where they are. They're over having fun.
Yeah. Throw a winner.
And then it just, you know, but then last year was the telling year. It actually started, well, because of the condition of the course. That was the first winter we had that weather was very, very good, and my numbers were very, very down with a good weather winter. 35,000 that quarter, You know, the next 6 months we lost our bridges like we always do. And then where it really got me waking up was this past fall, and I don't know if it has something to do with the post-storm. I think everybody was down a little bit in October. I was down like 10,000 in October, and then I was down 15,000 in November and 20,000 in December. That's when I started saying to myself, this is not good. And I immediately, you know, had a meeting with my staff and explained all that to them to give them a little bit of a heads up and let them know that what my plan was to, you know, send the letter and started talking to the city, to the, you know, to Kathy and John and everybody. And then, you know, and then you keep hoping, okay, well, maybe this thing will turn around. And then all of a sudden, January, I mean, we had, it's like 2 degrees for like 20 days.
Yeah.
We did, we were down 25,000 in January.
This was like the January of 2010.
It was a bad one. The worst January I've had was actually officially, it was, for me, it was 2014. We had a really bad winter that year. We had, our tea sheet would be full every day. And they just wouldn't come. They'd call and cancel. We'd have like 8 groups up coming from the villages or wherever. The villages, people don't come to my place anymore. They're done with Pine Oaks. And I used to get a lot of play from the villages. I advertise down there, but it's just not, it's not worth their drive. If they're going to come here, they're going to go here or wherever. They're not coming to Pine Oaks. I guess everybody's tired of that hot dog. That might be part of it. I mean, give them like 10,000.
Well, Miss Marie, you haven't said anything yet.
No, I'm just sad to see it's going to have to close, but I understand Clark's, you know, and I've been over there. This is my first year that I haven't played over there because of my leg condition. But I've been over there. I was over there for 24 years.
And you're not the only one that's not there anymore. Plus, we've had a lot of people die. I mean, we're no different.
Correct, yeah.
And funerals.
Some of the girls that's got my age now can't go play. That was 18 also.
Well, we had a lot of good gambling games out there. We had one memorable Rondo's tournament that's legendary, actually. So
I had a good time out there with doing the girls' golf camps out there with the Kunst and all of that stuff. Hot as can be, but we were out there for 2 whole weeks and all that stuff too. So
we did start the first tee there too.
That's true.
Yeah. And also we had a big tournament out there too with all the Kuntz girls coming. So it's sad to say, but I understand what Clark's been going through. I really do.
Just, you know, what I said before, I mean, I agree with everyone. You know, I hate to see a golf course close down, you know, especially, Pine Oaks, the layout is just astronomical. I mean, it's the best layout, I think, around here. If it was only, you know, a viable property where, you know, the drainage was good, the irrigation was good, the greens were great, you know. But, you know, I mean, the city hasn't put any money into it. And the greens were what? They were hybrid greens in 86, 84, whenever we put them in. What's the lifespan? 12 years? 15 tops, and look how long it's been. So, yeah. But anyway, I mean, the layout, the north and south course are fabulous, you know. I used to love to play the east course with all the trees.
Oh, that was fun.
I grew up on, you know, tree-lined fairways, and you had it in straight and up. But, worked out there when we closed here for a few months with Clark, and had a great time out there. It was super place, you know. You know, everything has to come to an end, and I think here we are capable of taking the influx of the golfers and treating them to a good golf, a great golf experience, you know. And I think we'll have to change the format here if we do get an influx of people that are coming here, and then as busy as we are getting, to maybe open up the back and front on the tee times, you know, we might have to do that. But the city would have to really think about enclosing the area for carts, you know, because that is a must. I mean, we've got these new carts that are only a few years old, and, you know, okay, you get damage, you get neglect from the players and stuff like that, but they do take a beat from the weather, you know, and the rain, the constant, you know, sun on them and all that. That ones that are, you can tell the difference for the ones that are open and not under shelter, the difference in the cart. You know, of course we do switch them around, but still they do take a beat. You know, I think Muni is capable of taking the influx of the major amount of players, you know, from there and supporting that. You know, Jason as our GM, you know, and John, I think we've got a good crew here to do it. You know, so I don't think the city wise, you don't have to worry because we can be ready. You know, as long as we get carts to be available. You know, on occasion when we're real busy, we don't have any carts at all, and people are waiting patiently for carts to come back in and stuff like that. You know, but if we had a number of carts and we had to increase the carts, I think we can do it. Anyway,
Chris, you were George, I think. I mean,
I don't really have anything to add. Like I said, you hate to see it go, but and I'd like to see it stay open for a couple of years, being that this is potentially going to take several years. But like I said, that's easy for me to say. I don't have to keep it running. And I think I agree with Chris, and that it's just going to get worse by next year. So, you know, you don't want to throw good money after bad. So if I was voting, you know, to move forward with this, it would be yes, and probably also yes to close it.
I'm on the same page. I mean, I think Clark, I do want to say all this, Clark's done a tremendous job.
Oh, absolutely.
Tremendous.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he should be committed.
Working with nothing. Yeah. Polishing the turret, as you said.
Yeah.
He really has.
Tough job, yeah.
So I guess for me, you know, listening to everybody.
And he cooks a mean hamburger and chicken, too.
And put my thoughts into it. I definitely understand where Clark's coming from. I hate to be in his position, but I totally understand it. So it is what it is. But I think it's just more dialogue to go along. You have a meeting on Friday. Council hasn't made their decision. Hell, they might throw you a couple $1 million to keep it moving. We don't know. Where they would get it from, I don't know. So we'll see. I think the power's in council, and they're going to do the right thing for the city. So, Kath, I think you've heard from all of us.
Yeah, and I appreciate it.
I guess we adjourn, unless you guys got something else.
No, that's all right. It.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Without a 10 potter,
what?